Hey guys, welcome back to Vertical Momentum. I'm your host, Richard Kaufman, also known as the Comeback Coach. Guys, they say never meet your heroes. That's bullshit. Anik has been one of my heroes for the last 6 years. I've been following. I might have been one of your first ones, one of your first million followers on Facebook. I love your books. And so, guys, we're going to be talking about business. We're going to be talking about FTC compliance. Maybe even FTC compliance, including with AI. I'm sure we might talk about that a little bit. But my brother, Anik, is an amazing dude, a great friend. I want to thank Devin Rodriguez for putting us together. He's a best-selling author, serial entrepreneur, and now he's changing the game, working with FTC and stuff like that. And we'll talk about that a little bit. So, Anik, my brother, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. It is an absolute honor to be here and happy to serve your audience. And thank you to the audience who's listening. And just a slight correction. I want to make sure no one misunderstands. I'm not working with the FTC or for the FTC in any way, shape, or format. They don't sanction anything that I talk about. I'm just, you know, talking about my experience, and I'm working with a compliance attorney who's, you know, brilliant for the last 20 years. But yeah, man, I'm excited to be here. I just, you know, I love talking about business entrepreneurship. And now what I would say is, you know, when people hear the word compliance and FTC, they go, ugh, oh, boring. Well, let me put it this way. I'm going to show you how I'm here to help you. As if you're just starting your business, you're just scaling your business. Let me help save you from the absolute worst thing that ever happened in my life, that collapsed pretty much my life, that cost me $10 to $15 million, and that even the person I hate the most, I don't actually hate anybody, but the person I dislike the most in the world, I would never wish this upon them. So that experience, when we talk about compliance, it's not about the compliance, it's about me helping you avoid that experience, because that's what I went through. So but yeah, man, take it away. I'm happy to go in any direction.
Like I said, I've been following you, and I'm so grateful to be able to finally get together. I seen your article yesterday, and we'll talk about it, and I'll let you talk about it a little bit more, but about how important in business exclusivity is. And that, you know, what I got from it is there's a reason why you don't see Ferrari or Lamborghini commercials on TV, because those that own Ferraris and Lamborghinis are not sitting on their asses watching TV. So I want to talk, we'll talk about exclusivity in a little bit, but first give us a quick down and dirty about, you know, where did you come from, where did you grow up, and how did you became the game changer that you are today?
Oh, man, you're too kind. Thank you for using such an awesome term. Look, I've been an entrepreneur. I've been an active entrepreneur, I like to say, for 21 years. I think I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. I'm 40 years old. The first business I ever started was a lemonade stand. And I was different because I realize now I was different because I was the third grader with a lemonade stand, but I hired second graders to work it while I was inside watching television. So, I was doing it a little bit different than the rest of the kids. And, I since then had tried to launch multiple businesses, even in high school. And, I don't come from an entrepreneurial background. My family's had three generations. We had the engineers, we had the doctors, and now we have the lawyers. So there's no entrepreneurship in my lineage. But as a young kid, I just took to the idea of carving my own path. My father, who brought us here, who gave me an amazing life, I had no lacks in my life, but he used to study under street lamps and candles. They had no electricity in the village that he grew up in. Here's the irony, though. You ready for this, Richard? The irony is he went on to become he got a master's in nuclear mechanical engineering. He was the head from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission side. So the government side, he worked for the government. He was the head at one point of two power plants, nuclear power plants that provided electricity to, I think, 11 million households. And so I've always said, how ironic, a man who literally had to use candles to get his education, eventually overseeing the electricity of 11 million people. So I grew up with that chip on my shoulder, man. That was burden on me. That was weight. I'm so proud of what my dad did, but how the hell do you outdo that? Right? I mean, I think I could become a billionaire tomorrow and still not outdo what he did. The guy studied with candles. I mean, he went off and got a master's and eventually a double masters with candles. This is his beginning point. So I wanted to take our family name to the next level and make my dad proud. I wanted to do something big for myself. Growing up, you know, I always saw my family, my dad, like I said, again, he was a mostly single earning household. My mom had a daycare, but I mean, it wasn't ridiculously active, and, but it was something. And it wasn't like money was flowing in the household. No, we never went short. Okay. There was never a meal we couldn't have. There was a beautiful house we grew up in. We had multiple cars. I just want to, if I wanted something fancy, it was Christmas or birthday. Like, it wasn't like we could just, you know, so there were still a lot of fights, small fights, but fights and bickering about money and about wanting things. As a young kid, I used to watch that and never judge it. Honest to God, even as a kid, I understood it. I was very respectful to it. But I always also knew that I envisioned a lifestyle for myself. And when I grew up there, money was never an issue. I didn't want to go to a grocery store and think about what I was buying. I just wanted to buy and just know that I was, it was a very simple, like, that's what freedom is to me. That's what financial freedom is to me, right? As a kid. So I understood that for me to best achieve that, I should probably become an entrepreneur. Plus, it's what runs through my blood. So in college, I started my first business out of necessity. I had no money. I found my way. I searched 18 months. I found my way to this world of selling info products. And I had my whole struggles. It took me months and months and months to make it work. I finally got one thing to work, another thing to work. Senior year of college, I was set to do seven figures. I had job offers from Wall Street and had all this great stuff going. I turned it all down, took my business, grew it to 10 million plus a year. Collapsed, blew it all up. Never used to splurge my money. I used to build it back into the business, but I get aggressive. Blew it all, went near bankrupt. Super bad situation. Grew it again. Lost it all again almost one time. Got almost near bankruptcy a second time. Grew it all again and finally dialed it in. Grew the company to almost $40 million a year. I was getting ready. It was 2 months away from selling it. We were due diligence. It was my big life dream to sell a company of my own before I turned 40. And I had an amazing team that I painstakingly put together. So I was also going to step down as CEO. I was a couple weeks away from stepping down as CEO and have always been great by my customers. Just so for a minute, we run three customer support teams at this time, 888 hours, 816, 24. So we're 24 hours coverage, 36 minutes of response time. We're getting tens of thousands of customers, like 10,000 plus customers a year. Sometimes they're all serviced. We have had zero legal issues. We've never had a customer complaint that went legal, never been investigated, never had any regulatory issues, had a super low refund rate, a super low chargeback rate, hyper responsive team. I built all these KPIs because I understood that our business was one in a heavily regulated space, the business opportunity, which I don't agree with that categorization, but that's what they categorize it as. So I built a company that I was like, let's not create any complaints. Let's always make sure we put our customers first and we should be good. Well, in May of 2022, it all came to a halt. That was going to be our biggest month ever, our most profitable month ever. It was also happened to be just weeks after my first child was born. And I was on paternity leave. Right when I got back, I get this dreaded FTC package from in FedEx that basically said, it was a love letter from the government that said, we'd like to get to know you better. And as much as I can suggest to people, never get any kind of love letters or any letters at all from the federal government. So that led to 18 months of watching what I had spent 20 years building get pulled apart limb for limb. And not by them. They were actually super professional and gave us all the time we needed. But I built the one type of business that would be the most impacted by the FTC regulations. I could be selling clothing. And the FTC could have said, hey, stop selling these slogans or stop getting your clothes made here or stop saying this in your advertising. And say, okay, fine, pay a fine, move on, keep selling clothes. But I was a publishing company where 80% of my revenue came from me publishing other people and other brands. And so when I got the notification that I'm being investigated, of course I'm going to tell them. I'm using their face and likeness every day. I don't have to tell them legally, but of course I'm going to tell them. That's how I run business. But I also knew the minute I tell them, they're all going to ask me to turn off their marketing. Fair enough. I would do the same. So before I even told them, I got the notice on Friday. And before I even got a chance to tell them on Monday, I shut all the business. Monday morning, I called the whole team at 9 a.m. We shut it all off. $40 million a year company. About to have its record month that we spent years building the team for. That we spent years figuring out how to run that business. It was a very difficult business. That we were selling in a couple months. Gone. And, yeah, he's still kind of licking our wounds from that, right? I was 39, so I was going to have sold the company right before I turned 40. That didn't happen. I didn't get to step down as CEO, so even though my daughter was born, I actually been in the most turbulent time of my business because it took 18 months to settle that case. So it's been a lot. It's been a check, man. So I've been through so much. I mean, my wife and I invest in real estate. We've had some massive fiascos there. So I always kind of say my life in recent times has felt almost like a bit of a reset. Not really, you know, again, I would say like we live a great life and, even with all the challenges, but, it's been a humbling moment. And this will be my third similar time in my life. I think maybe this is the last one. Right. And so they always say most billionaires self-made have at least two bankruptcies on their record. So I always say the third one that I almost hit with the FTC was a bonus. I went for extra credit. So,
So let's talk about it, you know, because, you had the two previous ones. And you're like, you know what? It's kind of like being married twice. And then the third one is like, this is it. I'm good. I'm happy. I'm married. The other two are practice marriages. Now I'm a happy man. And then that goes to shit. So, and then you have to go home and you got a newborn baby at home. You got a beautiful wife at home. And now you have to go sit at the kitchen table and be like, you're not going to believe this shit. You know, we had a $40 million company. Now we're at nothing again. What was that like going home that after getting that thing in the mail that first day? What was that like?
So I got the notice, right? And it was a Friday. And so ironically, Friday nights are date nights. So at that time, even though my wife had just had our baby like a month or a couple months before, my wife and I, traditional dating thing for us going back to before marriage, so 15 years ago, we would always go for shisha, like hookah, right? And so every now and then we'll go for hookah, and that's kind of our date night thing. So that night I knew we were going. So I spent the rest of the day on the phone, calling people, talking to attorneys. And then when we went out to the restaurant to have shisha, I said, hey, I got to tell you something. And I told her, and she was in total shock first, but then she wasn't, because she said, Anik, you always have been worried about the FTC. You've always talked about it, which is the irony, Richard, is that I had a full-time paralegal in the company. I had a lawyer that I thought knew everything. And I just did not, you go back and look at some of the things now and you're like, oh yeah, I can see why that's a problem. But in the heat of it, when you're with your customers all the time and you're making and you're spending millions a year on servicing them and making sure they're good, you just never think. I just never thought I'm the first one. I literally thought there would be like 17 other people that would go down before me, and that would be more than enough, you know, smoke in the air to know that you gotta like do this or that. I just didn't know they'd start with me. I was shocked by that. So she was surprised, shocked, and then she shared how, like, she's like, look, you kind of always knew about this. And then she turned around and this is what she said to me. This is why I'm so blessed. She just said, so what do you want to do? And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, do you want to like play nice and settle, or do you want to give them hell and go to court? I said, well, it's too early for that. I said, I don't know, right now they have to investigate, but you know, going to court could mean years of pain and millions of dollars. It could wipe us out. And I mean, short of like literally like pulling up her sleeve, she was like, bring it, like I don't care. And that, I think if there's a few things that really got me through that case, that moment, I mean, if you really think about it, right, sometimes I still, like even right now, I'm getting slightly emotional talking about it, because you think to yourself of spending 20 years, half your life building something, and that literally at the nth hour, we're talking months to go. In the terms of 20 years, 2-3 months is nothing. It's you know, a small percentage. To lose it all, it's like a total whiplash, and it's still settling in 2 years later. I'm still kind of adjusting and getting used to it. But she was just like, if it wasn't for her and for my daughter, so I eventually went in and I had a second girl during this whole time, so we have two girls now. It would have been a very different thing for me to handle mentally, but she was just a rock. She would listen when I needed her to listen. She'd give counsel when I needed her to give counsel. And what everyone in my life, including my wife, and my wife being the head cheerleader for this, has told me from beginning, and this would usually be a burden on me too. I wouldn't like it when people kept saying this. I know why they said it, and I appreciated it, but they would say, oh, we're not even worried about you. You're going to definitely come back, to use your terminology. You're going to make it back. And at that time, you're like, I'm glad you believe that and feel that way, but I don't see it. And when they would keep telling me that, I'd feel the burden of it. I'd say, God, everyone's counting on me. The whole company, all my team, my employees, everyone's like, he's got us. He always gets us out of these things. And quite frankly, month after month, I couldn't, right? To some level, even a couple years later, it's like, we're not back to where we were. I mean, we're leveling off and we're doing well. And I love what we're doing now. I love our new mission, but it's a fight every day. And I have had to deal with failure after failure in the terms that most people would use it. I don't recognize it as failure. I see it as a challenge, but it's been a lot. And so to your original question, it is because of my wife's reaction and the reaction of my key team members and my friends and my family and pretty much the industry, right? Because the industry could have just chewed me up a few months ago when the FTC press release hit and spat me out. No one did. That has just been making it so much easier. But yeah, a very long answer to your short question. What I thought could be very difficult and in many relationships, it actually is the final straw. A lot of relationships don't survive. I was warned of this, an FTC investigation. And I will say without a shadow of doubt that ours got infinitely stronger during that time.
And I get it because my bride, she's my best friend, my number one cheerleader. And without her, even though I'm 60% blind, I'm still able to do what I do because of her. But it was something I want to talk about is because you had the first two setbacks. I never call them failures because as long as you learn from them, they were never a failure. Mr. Ed Milet, one of my mentors, said, you know, things don't happen to you. They happen for you.
For you.
And everything is a teachable moment. So if you didn't have those two setbacks, you wouldn't be on track for a comeback because of what you went through. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I had to, in spiritual terms, I had to really ask myself in a biblical way too, like, excuse my language, but what the hell? Right. It was like, what the hell? Like, this sucks. Like, I'm one of the good people. I'm still convinced you can pick apart my marketing and things that were said over 3 years, all you want. But that's cherry picking the worst examples without any context. And I have yet to face an accuser, someone who can say that those words actually wrongly really hurt. I know people who asked for refunds from me 3 years later because they were sick now. I had an older person write me an actual letter in the mail that said, I bought your course during COVID time, but I'm falling under illness now. I need every money I can. I'm just asking. We owed her $1,000. I told the team, because we can't refund it from within the system. It was a 2-second decision. I told the team, write her a check. Send her a check. Like, this is who I was. So I know for a fact that, you know, I was a good person, and I am a good person, but sorry, I'm blanking a little bit. Take me back to your original question, because I want to kind of bring it all together here in a second. But what was your original question? I just completely went off on my own little tangent.
You know, now that you're on the comeback, if you didn't have those setbacks like Ed Milet talks about, you wouldn't be ready for a comeback.
So putting it back to a spiritual format, right? So like I had like all these deeper questions I was asking myself, like, but I was convinced like I wasn't. There's so many worse people than me in this industry. Why me, God? Why? Like, right? That conversation, like, why would you do this to me? And I swear the answer I got was, do you think Michael Phelps became the most rewarded Olympian by never, ever facing pain, never losing a race, never being in a situation where the ref was unfair, never having made sacrifices, painful, physical, spiritual, mental? As a matter of fact, if you want to eventually lift 500 pounds, you got to start with the 5 and the 10 and the 15 and the 20. You got to go through training, and training is usually painful and long, and just made me realize. I said, you know what? With every single instance of this that's happened, I've come back stronger. I've built things that are more robust. I've learned a lot of lessons. So there is something that I'm supposed to do that God's got in plans for me that required me to go through this moment and this effort. And it sucks right now, but in 5 years, I might be looking back at it going, holy crap, that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And I'm already seeing the path to that. I can see how that could be the case. I can see that little light at the end of that tunnel. But I would tell everybody that you, if you are having a life right now, so this, I use this as a warning. If you can look me dead in the face right now and tell me everything's just going great, your work is great, your life is great, relationship's great, kids great, health's great, I'm just great. And personally, I'm like, yo, I don't want to be anywhere around you. Because the bad is around the corner. Like, statistically speaking, there is something coming at you. Because it's just life. And it doesn't need to be avoided, ignored, or, you know, it's like, shit happens. And you know, I think God and I think life and the universe, whatever you want to call it, I think it's got something really huge in store for me. I think it's got something huge in store for everybody. You know, the one thing, though, like the Bible says and like everything says, one thing we're given is choice. We're given free will. Right. So one issue I have with the whole idea of law of attractions, people are like, oh, I could just think about it. And red Lamborghini pops up. That's not really what it says. You got to put the effort in. So right now with me, it's all these things happened for me, not to me. They lead to something. So the only way I find that something is if I keep going. Right. I just got to keep going one way or the other. I got to keep going. If I keep going, then I'm going to find that one thing. If I stop today, then I'm guaranteeing myself. So that's the choice. I get to choose. If that's why I always say failure is a choice, because as long as you're still trying, you haven't failed. You just found 1,000 ways to not do something. So yeah, that's my perspective mentally about it. And that's how I've been able to cope with it.
So Meyer Fem, I just want to say thank you for thank you for hanging out. Thank you for watching us. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate you. But let me ask you a question, because I'm not going to mention the dude's name because I'm not going to get sued and get in trouble. But, you know, I'm sure you're standing around and you're like, wait a minute. There's some guy walking around a rented mansion taking pictures of Lambos in his garage, and I'm the one that's getting jammed up for these problems. What is wrong with this picture? So I'm sure there was sometimes when you just got home and you just wanted to start throwing shit and getting aggravated, right?
That's probably been the toughest one. So I'm not going to name names either, but there was another case that started exactly a week before mine. So mine was delivered to me in the third week of May of 2022. And this other person's was a week before that. I don't know this person, so I don't pass any judgment on them. I don't pass judgment on anybody. But I saw their marketing practices, and I heard from many others what was happening to their customers. And roughly, I knew what they were selling. The package they were selling, I've been around the industry long enough to know that you're asking for trouble. And when I heard about their case, the first thought that I had was, yeah, sounds about right. About time. Like that was writing on the wall. And like 2 days later, I get my letter, and I don't really hear of anybody else. I mean, it was one thing if they were going to go ahead and get after the top 10 people in the industry and send those letters out, but they went after that person and me? I'm sorry, time out. That one of the things I was the most upset about, you, my attorney was literally laughing about this. I said, how dare you lump me with that person? How dare you? It wasn't even the fact that I was upset about having received the notice. Of course I was upset about that, but I was even more offended that I would receive it in proximity to that other one, thinking that there is a conference room in which my company's name and my name showed up on a slide deck with that one. That thought would keep me up at night, because I felt, and I have proof and evidence of the fact, that we are not to be even on the same building when being discussed. Like, we are completely different, but nevertheless I was in the same month. And but here's the difference: their case, 6 months done. The government, the regulators came out like bats out of hell and said, the hell with you, we know exactly what you've done, how bad it is. There was their bans were worse and their fines were worse. My case, 18 months. No permanent ban, injunctions. Did they say rosy things about me? No, but that says a lot. 6 months, 18 months, they have to dig a little bit deeper with mine. But, oh my God, even today, Richard, I am here, man. Let's just pull up Facebook. Let's just start scrolling. Give us, 20 seconds, give me max, and I'm going to see an ad that makes me want to vomit, because I think, really? You're going to let this shit fly? but I was the problem. And here's something I did say when I got a chance to go to the FTC and meet the attorneys there. I said, you guys are making a mistake. You're removing a line of defense. My company is a line of defense from the things that you protect consumers from. And you're removing one of the good guys that takes care of their customers. By removing me, you're not going to make it so that customers buy less of this stuff. What you're going to do is direct them right into the hands of those who do not take nearly the care of them that we do.
And you're right, because like I go on my phone every day. I'm not a consumer anymore. I'm a producer, but I see, hey, become a millionaire, just $97. And you're like, how can this be even realized and put it out there when I was in the supplement industry for 30 years and I couldn't even put on a bottle that this will help diabetes or else I'm going to get sued. So I'm like, so how can this one say, I'll get you to be a millionaire at $97 and that's okay. So you must have saw that and your ears must have just blew up.
Every day, multiple times a day. Now I've become desensitized to it and I've just decided, again, I was chosen for a reason. It's a bigger cause, right? I had to go down because the next thing I'm going to do requires the training I received over the last 2 years. If that's a ugly thread to pull because it leads you down a hall of darkness, there are no answers. I will never, ever know why I got investigated. I will never know how or why or what triggered it. I would probably have to become best friends with the attorneys who came after me, take them out to drinks, get them drunk, and I still probably won't find out. So it's like the chances of me ever having answers are nil to none. So I got to not think about it because I'm not going to get an answer.
So then, like I've had a lot of friends, they went bankrupt. Well, they were supposed to go bankrupt. But they called all their people, be like, listen, I'm not going to go bankrupt because I still owe you money and I want to pay you back. But I promise you, it's going to take forever, maybe a dollar a week, but I'm going to make sure I take care of you. And then when they got their company back up and running, they backed them up. So were there some people that you were still working with, they were like, Onik, I got your back. I trust you. You've done nothing but right for me. I got your back and I'm going to go to bat for you. Were there people like that?
Richard, everybody. Everybody. There is one person I can name two people that I could name that weren't supportive. One of them couldn't care less. He's not a very good person. So he was selfish. He got scared. And it was not about me. It was more about not wanting to be around me because he thought it could, you know, I got cooties. My cooties could rub off. And I didn't care. That person didn't take more than 15 minutes of time in my mind. The second person, there's just history there. And let's just say more jealousy than anything. And they've been slightly vocal, passively vocal since my case solved itself. They did silly things like unfriending me and a couple other things. But again, half an hour, 1 hour of space of my head before I moved on. Everybody else, Richard, I owed immediately what happened, right? So we just know, okay, you can have a war chest of cash in a business to prepare for the winter. Nobody ever prepares to go from 4 million a month or 3.5 million a month to like zero. That's not preparable. That's catastrophic. That's, you know, that's what we did. I mean, we had some rebuilds activities and stuff, but we basically went to like next to nothing. I had to lay off 80% of the team within less than 7 days of receiving that notification. So I had built a war chest, thank God. And it was carrying us for a while, but like it was running out fast. So, yeah.
And I'm sure that during those 18 months, I'm sure that those lawyers' fees weren't exactly cheap. Trying. So I'm sure that was a hell of a battle.
Dude, it was. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. The bills were insane because it was double stacked. So one bill would be the bill for fighting the case, the other bill would be for all the things that we had to do now for compliance, because God forbid I wanted to actually sell something. The lawyers had me going through a brutally extensive review process of my copy. So I had, like, both of them were multi four-figure sums. In the end, I spent anywhere between around $1 million in legal fees, just in legal fees. You know, that doesn't include a lot of other costs, a lot of other costs.
So then, okay, take us to the day 18 months is done, everything is settled, and now you're like John Travolta in the movie where you're just going, where do I start? How do I start over again? So take us to that day when you got back to your office or your house. What was that day like? Trying to figure out.
I would say it wasn't really a day, right? Because we had been trying little bits and things for a long time. But when the case was officially done would be when they do their press release. So if anything, what you're doing is you're in full crisis management mode to see the impact that this is going to have on you and your company and your ability to even be in the industry. What would the industry say? That's when I was just so blessed, because I got ahead of it. So I never let a third party carry the narrative. If it involves me, I carry the narrative. It's always been my rule forever. So I got ahead of the thing. I made sure the people that need to know heard about it from me, the honest truth, right? Here's where I messed up. Here's what I didn't. Here's the truth. Here's what's going down. Just wanted you to know. And every single time they would respond, say, we got your back. You have our support. What do you need? And by the time the message came out, what I was trying to do was cut people off at the desire to forward it to other people. That's where you create this like viral madness, right? Well, if you had heard about it from me already and someone sends you a link, you're like, oh, yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah, Anik told me about it. The chances of you forwarding it are a lot less. So quite honestly, a couple of posts here and there from people, nothing crazy. We sent out a notification to our customers. They didn't care either. So the day that it was over, I think I went first into the most like fearful mode, right? Because you're like, now people will find out. My parents are going to read what they wrote. Like, thankfully for me, I was way overprepared for that. Like, it wasn't necessary. Beyond that, now you think, okay, at least I don't have this monkey on my back. So even the lawyers say, okay, hey, we can start doing stuff again now, right? Like, yeah. So you have that John Travolta moment. You're like, well, what do we do now? And for us, the other irony of it was I had built this beautiful $4 million facility, okay? It's called the Learn Center, 26,000 square feet. It's a lecture hall, classrooms, video studio, co-work space. It's got a nap room and a brain room and game room and, oh God, it was a haven for entrepreneurs. The reason I built it was because I did a lot of events for entrepreneurs and I was tired of paying hotels and AV companies. And I built this place. It was mine. I could do whatever I want with it. I could do as many events as I want there. Well, we haven't really been doing a lot of events. We had started to pick up doing events post COVID. And then I got the FTC notice. A lot of my employees went virtual. And really the only thing we were using was the studio, which was like less than 2,000 square feet or 1,500 square feet of the space. Everything else was co-worked out. Well, the landlord starts. So we only had a year left on our lease, and the landlord starts to kind of clear out all the other tenants, and they want to repurpose the whole building. So about 2 months after our case closes, 2 or 3 months, the landlord starts being like, get out, get out, get out, leave early, poke, 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 leave early. And I had this moment. Initially it was ego that was really driving me. But then I sat back. I'm like, wait a minute. My mastermind's already outgrown my space. I have to host it elsewhere. I have no reason to keep this massively expensive facility except for my emotional attachment to it. I'm not doing events. I'm out of that space now. Personally chose to, not the FTC directed me to. So I made a deal with them. And in January, I left the Learn Center, something that my wife, myself, and my father built practically with our hands. I mean, we had a construction company, but we chose every carpet, every piece of furniture. We brought some of it. And so I just need a studio. So we're building a studio right now. But in comparison, to let you know, this is a temporary spot. I'm going to build the next one, the next center, but own it, not rent it. Big lesson learned there. I'm currently sitting in a 1,900 square foot space from 26,000. So I'm literally having that moment, Richard. Sometimes I'm looking around, I'm like, oh shit, this is very humbling. Like, we're kind of It's like we rewind the clock. But you know how I look at it, how I get through it? So before we had this interview today, Richard, I spent, let's see, a little over two and a half hours this morning. Actually, probably about 3 hours. Learning about large language models, NLP, which I forget what it's in, natural language programming, machine learning. And I got schooled by a developer with a big aha. Well, no, they were teaching me something, and then I had a big aha moment on how to solve the number one biggest problem that we've been frozen at for our software company we're building. This is a rudimentary, fundamental, baseline, concrete, ground floor issue. Stop the presses, stop everything until this is solved. There's no point. And I've been going developer, 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 expert, 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 and gathering information. I'm doing what I do best, right? I've been doing that the last week. It's slow, but it's concrete. I know how to learn things, like solidly learn things new. And I was so proud that this morning I had the moment. And then they go, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, there you go. That's brilliant. I'm like, why am I? Guys, I don't even know what I'm doing. But here's the good news. I have failed. I've tried to build a tech company 6 times. I have failed. When I say failed, I'm talking about having lost and invested well over $12 million. I was trying to build an edutech business before edutech was a term. I would have been one of the forefronts of the edutech space. I would have been a billionaire by now, but I just didn't know how to get it done. I don't know tech. I don't know how to deal with tech. I don't know how to build it. I don't know how to design it. I don't know how to talk it. You know what I'm doing right now, man? I'm getting a master's degree in the world of tech. I'm learning tech. I'm learning how to talk tech. But a lot of what I'm doing now is because of the last 5 years of trying to build the last tech and seeing the types of things. And now I know this, and now I'm doing it better. And so although I'm back at ground level, I know how to hire. I know I'm doing a much better job with the tech specs. I know how to, I have a brand. I have connections. I have resources. I have the ability to be on Richard's podcast. I got a lot more on my, in my arsenal right now. So it's like, not really starting all over, man. You got a clean slate, but you've got 20 years, 21 years of knowledge. Imagine how much faster we can build this thing, but don't rush it. Do it right. Build that foundation correctly. Cause in every other company I built, it collapsed because the foundation was faulty. And so,
right. So then let me ask you a question. We get off the phone today and we get off the call. Your phone rings. It's Onik from 18 months ago. I said, hey, I want to sit down and talk. And you go, you and him go out to lunch. What are you going to tell him, your 18 months ago self? What are you going to tell him today that he should have known 18 months ago?
Dude, that's a damn good question. Kudos to you. Really good question. And I got an answer. And I've never answered this question publicly, so this will be the first time here. All right, here's what I tell him. Number one, drop the ego. The company that you're about to try to save, it's not worth it. That business is gone. Business is done. Walk away. Save your capital and get down to just a few key team members you need and buy and use the time capital to buy you time, not to continue to try to fight to save this business because you're going to burn millions more, which is what I did. Number two, step away from all of it. Let the team that you keep behind go to work as they did and do all the discovery for the FTC. You step away for 2, if not 3 months and do nothing. Do nothing for a few months. Go into full-blown, just go into retrospect. Figure out what you want to do next. Don't rush it. Don't let the ego drive the desire to get back to that number as fast as humanly possible. Had me doing some stupid shit, if I'm being honest with you. Take 3 months off. It'll be painful. Just do it. Just take it off. You have plenty of cash in the war chest. Use it to get yourself some time off. Number three or four, wherever I'm at now, I would have had the idea for this AI-powered software because it was right around the time that I did have the original idea. Don't go fast. Do it right. Clear your schedule. Don't have all this other bullshit because all these other projects I was testing meant 10 hours a day on my calendar, which meant the software that I really wanted to build, which I was super excited about, which I thought was the future, got 30 minutes of my time at the end of the day when I'm sluggish. No, get rid of all that other crap so that the entire 10 hours a day is invested in the software. Document, 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 plan, talk to experts, freaking build the foundation. Have a 1,000-page tech spec document prepared before you even talk to a developer. So that we do it right this time, not the way I've done it in the past. And then number five, take a big chunk of that money that I ended up saving by not trying to save the old business, put it in a separate business, fund this company, hire two or three of the right people, give them 6 months, take the MVP to market. All of this said and done, within 1 year of having received that notice, I would have been in a much better place mentally. I would have had a product out the door that I really love and believe in, and we would have still been financially sound, and I wouldn't have added the debt that I ended up adding by trying to save the old business. So ego and a desire to fill the void was instrumental in me probably not responding the right way to an urgent or to a catastrophic situation. So whether it's the FTC suing me or whether it's a client suing you or whether it's anything happening and your business completely tanks and falls apart, one of the things I've learned is in a moment of crisis, you don't necessarily need to immediately jump into action. Okay? Take a responsible, rational amount of time to collect data and process information. So if you're in an urgent situation, you're outside in a mall and you hear the sound of what that it sounds like a gun, obviously you're not going to sit around and process for too long, but given the situation responsibly, if you took 1 to 2 seconds, that's it, to even say, all right, I hear gunshot wounds. I hear gunshots. They sound like they're in the floor below me. They sound like they're pretty far away. Where's my closest exit? Boom, let's go. Versus instant screaming and scrambling right or left and doing that. That one or two seconds, although it may look like you look like an idiot for that 1 or 2 seconds standing and listening while everyone's screaming and running, but that 1 or 2 seconds means you get out. And you go beeline straight, you don't zigzag, boom, straight out the door. Probably saves your life. So it's a very extreme example, but I want to give this to everybody because you're going to have crisis moments in your life. And I really believe that the best thing you can do when a crisis happens is stop and process. I didn't stop and process until very recently, maybe a few months ago. And when I did stop and process, I was like, oh shit, I shouldn't be doing any of the things I'm doing right now.
Okay, then we're going to talk about what you're doing now. You get a knock on your door. It's Private Joe Snuffy. He's just getting out of the military. Now he wants to start a tech business. He wants to start a branding and marketing business. Wants to take you for lunch, and he sits down. What's the first thing you tell him before he even gets an idea about starting a business from where you've been in the last 18 months?
Sure. So how much time do you have? How quick do you need money? How much money could you lose without it impacting your life? And what responsibilities are on your head? So the guy answers and says, I've got 2 kids. I need money tomorrow. And I've got daytime, 9 to 5, because in the evenings I got to be with my kids. I look them dead in the eyes and I say, go get a job. Go become a freelancer. But a full-blown business is not for you, not right now. And I say that with all due respect. Now, let's say we get past all of that. They've got the right answers, and they're ready, and they got all the resilience, as in your words, or they got all the ready. They're ready to go. They're ready to go 9 to 9, and you know they're ready to do whatever it takes. They prioritize having that company, that business in their life. Then I say, great. What's the business? Well, my friend John, you lost me already. What's your business? See, when I went to college, one of my best friends, he's a coder. He's a very high-level coder. He's got clearances and shit. So what, did I go to school and say, well, so-and-so is a developer. He's going to become a developer, so I'm going to become a developer. No, I pick what's right for me. So if you want to pick a business, if you want to build a business, what business? What's your product? What's your offer? Who are you targeting? No one ever has answers to this, Richard. No one. So right now, as I'm building my software company, come ask me. I will tell you with clear. I didn't have that clarity 10, 11 months ago. Guess what? The last 10, 11 months, whatever we developed, it's kind of being thrown in the trash. Not fully, but now I'm documenting. I'm going to end up, I mean this, okay? We're probably going to have a 700 to 1,000 page document that is going to have UI wireframes, feature listings, tech specs. It's going to have all of the raw data that we need to train the AI engine. It's going to have everything. We're working on it right now, and we're building it fast. We're probably already past about 150 pages or so. But that level of, I don't want to say planning, because planning in the world of business is stupid. Nothing ever goes to plan. But preparing, right? Preparing so that a developer, when they come to develop, they go, here's the UI, here's the tech spec write-up, here's the user stories, and here's the founder audio talking about the features so I can hear him. Boom, I got the UI too. Okay, just make this button do this with da-da-da-da-da-da, done. Versus the way most of us do it when we're trying to build the plane as we're flying. So first and foremost, I've got to ask you someone this is like, is this right path for you or not? Same friend I speak about who's very, very, very talented and technical. Every 3, 4, 5, 6 months, man, he's been my best friend forever. Every 3, 4, 5, 6 months, he gets this, I want to do a business. And it's been going on for years. Finally, one day I sat him down. I said, listen, every time you want to do a business, you come to me and I have to give you assignments and you never do them. So he's like, well, I don't have time. I said, well, you have to spend every evening, every weekend, no more happy hours, no more family celebrations, no more going out. And he goes, whoa, hold on, man. I believe in work-life balance. I already work hard enough during the day. I can't do all that. I said, that's fine. Then that's what you need to do. You want me to coach you and guide you? I need you to sign me a written oath that you're not going to go to a single happy hour. You're not going to go to a single family event. And you're going to not put the kids to bed 3 nights out of the week. And you're going to give me 3 hours every night after they go to bed. And I want that commitment for 2 months, 3 months. He's like, let me go talk to my wife. He goes home, talks to his wife, comes back 2 days later. He's like, hey, man, no, that's not for me. I said, great. Good job. Congratulations. Like, this is not for everybody. But if you had asked me 21 years ago when I was like a budding entrepreneur working on it, I used to look around and be like, why does someone want a job? Ugh. Right now, I don't think 95% of people who want to be an entrepreneur have to be like, you want to be an entrepreneur or do you want to be an intrapreneur? You might want to be someone who gets variable compensation and is able to control their own destiny, but within the confines of an organization so that you don't have to carry 70% of that bullshit that entrepreneurs do. Yes, your reward is limited, but so is largely your risk. And more consistency, more. So I have found a lot of merit for people who want to be entrepreneurs actually becoming intrapreneurs. I could have a conversation with that person for at least in the entire first or second lunch before we ever even talked about their idea.
I love that because my wife has been with her job for 30 years. So she's an entrepreneur. I'm the entrepreneur of the family. But like you said, it's taken me 6 years to be an overnight success. So putting it on the weekends, the family time, vacations, it's like having a second wife when you have a business.
You know,
So I get I totally understand what you're saying about it's not meant for everybody. It really isn't.
Richard, you'll laugh at this. My first college football game that I ever went to was 6 months after I graduated. I didn't go to frat parties. I didn't go to college football games. I didn't go to college. We had one of the top. I went to University of Maryland College Park, UMCP. We had a huge rivalry with Duke. Yeah, go Terps. And we were a huge rivalry with Duke. We were having a killer. I don't even know what they do now, but killer basketball seasons. Two of the seasons I was there. Out of three, I was there for 3 years. The first year I didn't go there. Two of the three, they were like contenders for like breaking through the higher levels of the playoffs. And they would play with Duke. It was epic. It would be riots it was excitement beyond excitement. It was a week long thing. Like the school was shut down. People didn't care. That was me working away on my business. I just wasn't doing any of it. A lot of people are like, that sucks. You shouldn't do that. And I'm like, you know what? You're right for yourself. For me, I have no regrets. I love the fact that I did that. But I've also seen a direct connection between someone's ability and desire to do that and their likelihood of succeeding as an entrepreneur. And just to your point, my cousin, I'm in a family full of doctors and lawyers. My cousins are all doctors and lawyers. Richard, they're rich, man. They live the nicest houses, drive the nicest cars, take the nicest vacations. They're doing great. They're entrepreneurs. And you know what? They got a lot more black hair than I do. I have a lot more white hair than them. they don't go to sleep worrying about payroll and HR and, you know, they don't worry about any of that junk, you know, so, and they do great and they love their life and they get to golf every weekend. I'm not a golfer, but I'd love to be able to do something every weekend, but I usually don't. And so, but you know, I love what I do. So there's different ways to skin the cat, so to say, of financial freedom. 20 years ago, I said entrepreneurship was the only way to do it. 20 years later, a little bit wiser, white hair, I say entrepreneurship is the hardest way to do it. There's many, many ways to get financially free.
But what, I can't remember the guy's name. He's like the world's biggest investor. What's his name? I can't remember his name.
Ray Dalio, Bill Ackman.
Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett,
and somebody once asked him, he's like, do you watch football? And he said, no, money's my game. Yeah. So for me, instead of going to Atlantic City or Vegas, podcasting and social media is my game. So I play. I don't work. I play. And I think once you have that mindset that you, if you love what you're doing, it doesn't really seem like I work a lot of hours, even though I do. So I think you have to love what you do in order to be as crazy as we are to be an entrepreneur.
1,000%. This is why I'm not a big fan of the idea of not building a business around something you have a passion for. I think eventually you burn out on those businesses. I should be super burned out right now. And I'm tired, but I'm not burned out, Richard. I'm still here early. I'm still doing these podcasts. I'm doing 100 this year. Heck, this is, I think, my 10th out of the 100. I think I might crush past 100. I haven't even tried yet. And I think that that's passion, because now I've got this deep, strange passion for compliance, advertising compliance, because there's so much pain I experienced and so much I went through. Like Ed Milet says, right? We were talking about this earlier. Your best customer is a person you used to be 5 years. And then someone else famous who I don't know said, turn your mess into your message.
Yeah.
And so I've gotten really passionate about teaching advertising compliance. And I'm working on the book. This book right now is not written. This is just like a showpiece. I'm beating my head here, Richard. I'm really getting frustrated, but we are on the fifth write of it. I think I'm going to be on the sixth, maybe seventh before it gets right. And the most versions of a book I've ever written. It's very frustrating, but it's so damn fulfilling. And the reason I continue to fight to do it, and I want to do it right, and I want to do it with quality, is because this book is going to serve a lot of people and help a lot of people with a topic that no one knows anything about. So that passion is driving me to edit the book at 12 at night when I'm tired, but I got to get through it. Got to get it done. To take something else I'm not passionate about, I ain't working on it between the hours of 12 and 1 after putting two kids to bed. It ain't happening.
I'm just me, like my new book is going to is in editing right now. And it's actually being promoted by Mr. John Lee Dumas. He's actually writing the foreword and the back cover. Awesome. But like you said, if you don't love what you do, when it's 2:43 in the morning and you're sitting there editing going, do I need a comma? Do I need a period? If you don't love what you're doing, then you're not even going to get to that 2:43 moment, right?
Just to stretch that point, I'm working on this documentation right now. And I'm researching and learning, like I said, and machine learning and NLP and LLMs and AIs and AGN and all this stuff. And I'm loving it. I had a call this morning with a consultant. I have another call tomorrow morning. I had a call this morning with the consultant at 10:30 in the morning. Man, I was here by 10 a.m. I was like a little kid on Christmas morning. I was ready to get on that call. I was up last night researching some things to ask him questions. Then a couple hours the night before that, I was working on some documentation. So I was playing with ChatGPT to come up with the proper training documents for my engine, my AI that we're developing for the software. And I'm sitting there and I'm chugging away and creating this document. All of a sudden, next thing I know, it's 12:30 and I get a message from my wife. She's like, hey, you should go to bed. And I'm like, I have so much fun. Like, so stupid. I'm writing, listen to this. I'm using AI to create a training document for a database system to teach it how to recognize marketing compliance as per the FTC guidelines. I mean, I'm falling asleep. I think people are falling asleep just listening to me say those words. There ain't nothing exciting about that. Certainly not to keep you up at 12:30 instead of going to bed. And yet here I am pumped and excited because to me, I see the value of that and how it will serve people and bring to light things they will not otherwise know. If I don't choose this mission, if I don't do this, no one else is going to, not for a long time. So all of a sudden now I feel like I'm an Avenger, right? It's like, let's go do this thing. We got people to help. And that's what powers you through the tough times, the difficult times. That's how true entrepreneurs, the entrepreneurs that are doing it just for the money, they fall apart during these times. So I'm telling you, there's many a nights where people tell me, they're like, you sure you want to teach this stuff? Sounds, you really want to stay in this arena? Don't you want to put this into bed and walk away from it and never really, don't you want the FTC to be three letters no one's ever allowed to say to you? And I'm like, I could, but then my pain would become no one's gain. It would get siloed off. And I was like, that seems like such a waste. So, but that level of passion, please find that before you're like, I want to be an entrepreneur. So what the hell do you want to, what do you want to do? Your net worth and what you end up making, I swear, I mean this from the bottom of my heart, is going to be directly linked to the value you output.
You know, and I love it. And then I want to hop on to what that little book that we're going to be talking about in a minute. That I hear people say, oh, I can't afford an assistant. ChatGPT-4 is like $20 a month. And if you can't afford $20 a month for an assistant, then you don't need to be in business at all. Because if you train ChatGPT the right way, it's going to be so invaluable to your business. I'm just saying, get it, try it out. ChatGPT-4, definitely try it out. So now let's talk about the elephant in the room. You know, that little book right there. And when it comes out, I want the first copy. I want it autographed. And we'll have you back on the show to promote it out. Talk to us about what you're doing now and what your passion is now.
Okay. So you're gonna laugh about this. So I've been saying for the while, I started as a joke. Now it's become like a tagline. And so I've said that my mission is to bring the good news of compliance. Obviously I'm doing a little play of words there on our Lord and Savior Jesus, right? But I'm like, I'm bringing the good news of compliance. And so we were supposed to launch this book mid-Feb. We're doing this, it's end of Feb. We're not anywhere near close. I just hired an editor, and the editor's like, send me the book. I'm like, yeah, about that. Give me some time. We got rounds and rounds of editions happening. Here's the irony. I actually think the book's now probably not going to launch until like early to mid-April, which I just find funny because it lines up with Easter. So someone caught that and they're like, man, you're really taking this whole good news thing pretty to heart. And I'm like, it's the way it's shaping up, but the book will be damn good. And that's goal number one. The book's also going to have behind it an academy of compliant marketing. So someone wants to learn the compliant marketing models, what instead of like what you can't say, what you can and how to say it. We'll have a whole academy built out. We're also currently at the very moment offering a free marketing analysis. If you're doing $500,000 a year or more and you want to get a quick assessment of your marketing for free as to like whether you're like out there totally breaking the rules and or not, we'll give you a quick high level assessment for free. So what I've done now is I've created an organization with the attorney who helped finally bring me through the case at the end, who is brilliant. It's the smartest compliance attorney I've ever met by far. And I've paid a lot of them. So him and I came together. We created something called the National Association of Advertising Compliance, the NAOAC. So you can see us at NAOAC.com. If you want the audit, I'm going to give you a couple of URLs. If you want the audit, go to NAOAC.com/audit, AUDIT, NAOAC.com/audit. If you want to know more about the book, the academy, and of course the podcast that we started. So every week we talk about marketing compliance. The podcast is also called Don't Say That. The book is called Don't Say That. And the URL you can go to find out more about this stuff is don'tsaythat.com. So we've got these two brands. We've got our National Association of Advertising Compliance, where we'll do a free audit for you or a free assessment, see if you are qualified to be part of our audit. And then we'll also do, we have a book and the podcast. And lastly, I'm working on the software, which will be months away at this point still, but it's making progress in a great way. The software is going to plug into your business. You're going to connect it, hook it up to your sales call systems, your this systems, your that systems, your social media. And it's going to be your watchdog. every day. It's going to watch over what you're doing, what's going on, what your team is doing, what your salespeople are doing, what your marketers are doing, what your email writers are doing. It's going to track for compliance. It's going to alert them, alert you, monitor, score, and give you an opportunity to clean up your stuff. And it's going to do it all using AI, and it's going to do something that a human today, even if you had a budget of $50,000 a month, you couldn't get a human to do it. The level it'll check. So I'm proud of what we've designed. We just need to build it. It's a complicated thing to build. People were like, oh, just prompt ChatGPT. Yeah, it doesn't work like that. The thing that we're building is it's intense. So we've got the training, the education, the podcast, the free stuff, the paid stuff, and of course the software. So when I say I'm like all in on this compliance stuff, I mean like I'm all in.
I could just see the swag. Just people wearing don't say that swag. I want a t-shirt. Yeah. I want a t-shirt that, because if I'm walking down the street, somebody's going to see my shirt and they're going to be like, don't say what? So it's an automatic speaking point, right?
Yeah. 100%. That was part of, I wanted to turn it into a hashtag, right? So, make it more fun. I'm very good at building brands. It's what I've done for 20 years. And so that was one of the things is I want to make this fun. The worst thing you can do is listen to a lawyer. They're boring. And I was like, well, one thing I'm very good at is writing words that people like reading. I'm a copywriter by nature, by heart. And I'm also a pretty good speaker, and I can keep people engaged with my story. So let's bring that skill set to this mind-numbingly boring topic and make it exciting and make the news get out there. So that's what I've been doing.
But now you're also a very, like I said, I've been following you for 6 or 7 years. You're also like on your mastermind. You only accept like 3 out of every 10 people that apply to your mastermind. So you're very, not picky, but the word is selective. Yeah. And the reason why I'm bringing it back is because you put out a post on LinkedIn yesterday about how the Rolls Royce Ghost is made as 70% of the parts of a BMW, but one sells for $150K. The other one sells for $500K because of exclusivity. So talk about that a little bit, about exclusivity, especially in business and the minds of others.
You know, that which is too readily available, we as humans don't attest as much value to. That's it. That which is more sparing, that which is harder to get, we strive harder to get it. This is why in relationships, sometimes the chase ends up making the whole relationship more exciting and more fun. So when you are trying to be something to everyone, you're just watering down your brand. Learn to say no and learn to be a lot to a specific group of people and carry with you a sense of community and belonging. By the way, the next generation of marketing is going to be all about community. And it's also trust and community are the only way to truly do compliant marketing, because a lot of the things you're not allowed to say means you need to remove the hype from your marketing. The only way you remove hype is to introduce trust. The only way you get trust is usually by being around for long enough. And if you build a community, they do a lot of the trust building for you. So if you're building a community, but you let everybody and anybody in, I have the one that you were talking about. I have a Facebook group called Expert Scale, where we have like a 70-80% rejection rate. But the reason that the group is so healthy is because every post made in the group and all comments are people that are like-minded, qualified to a certain level, serious, and we quickly kick people out that don't, you know, that don't meet the rules. So the more you try to be something for everybody, the less you'll become for everybody. The more you say no and really find your silo and become everything you can for them, the bigger you'll get. So today, now, me, the marketer on it, I still love teaching marketing, and I will to a level, but my daily mission and absorption now is compliance. That's what I'm going to do. So if a woman or a man is not interested in compliance, learning compliance, I will not try to appease them. I will simply tell them I'm not your person. Thank you. Goodbye. So be selective and be a lot to that vertical, and that's going to be how you become very big.
Okay, now I'm also a big marketing and branding guy. I love to learn. I've read over 6,000 books. I got 18 books going right now, 2 audio books. I just got done talking to Hermosi and Layla. And something that they believe in is if you're a business owner, you should have at least – three different levels. You should have your basic level, your middle level, and the third one is, yeah, nobody's going to buy this fucking thing at all. And but 2% of the people will buy that automatically. And I had yesterday, my air conditioning went, my heating unit went, and the guy came over. He's like, here's our crazy deal. Nobody buys this. Nobody likes the middle one, but the bottom one, but the middle one, pretty much everybody goes for. So he did it right in front of me, what I teach about all the time. But he said 10% of the people will buy that big, hairy, stupid deal because they want the best of the best. So talk about that just for a minute or so.
Yeah. So I actually say it differently. I say that to build a scalable business, you need four offer functions. Offer function one is called the acquisition offer. It could be free, it could be paid, but it's the thing that goes out, casts a wide net, gets people in. This book is an acquisition offer. I'll never make money on this book. I'm never going to become a millionaire from the book, but the book is going to get a lot of people in a transaction capacity into my business. It's a low, it's a high impulse, low intensity purchase decision. So even cold audiences will love it. So that's acquisition. Number two is liquidation. Now I'm going to be spending money on Facebook and other places to get this buyer. I'll spend 40 or 50 bucks. If I don't liquidate my ad spend, right? Because the book is only 10 bucks. So I have a $30 to $40 differential. If I don't liquidate that rather quickly, it's going to limit how I can scale. It's going to bankrupt me. So liquidation offers are the upsells and the bumps and the things that go behind it that you upgrade your book order so that you can make it so that your customer acquisition cost gets very small, if not profitable. Number three is my academy. It's my $1,000 to $2,000 offer that you're going to purchase, which has the aspect of community and it has the compliant marketing model and it's got just much more in-depth training. Now, the level above that, we're going to actually have a so that's your profit offer. So far we did acquisition, liquidation, and now your profit offer. The profit offer, you can have multiple ones. In my business, I'm going to have the academy, but I'm also going to have a certification program that companies can purchase so that they can get their employees certified. Those are going to be pretty good annual rebuild type of programs too. So we'll have a couple of offers in the profit area, but you know, we also have the audit. So our audits, if you end up getting a full audit, can go anywhere from $5,000 to $50,000. But then the fourth function I talk about is called recurring. Which is very pivotal if you want to live a life where you don't get white hair as an entrepreneur. When your business gets big enough, you crave and need recurring. So in our business, we're building the software. So these are functions: acquisition, liquidation, profit, and continuity or stability. Okay. So if you can have a offer to fulfill each of those functions, you have a business that I believe has the foundation and capability to become an eight-figure business. I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying that you have a fighting chance.
I love it, bro. And I'm so grateful for you. Devin, I want to say thank you, Devin. Without you, we wouldn't be together. Guys, if you don't know Devin Rodriguez, you need to know Devin Rodriguez. He's also serving his great country right now. He's an active duty military serving his country. But also, if you want to get on the best podcast in the world, you need to talk to Devin. And I want to thank you, Devin. And Anik, I just want to say I'm so grateful that we finally got together. Mm-hmm. It's been six years in the making, and I want to be the first person to buy that book, and I want an autographed copy, by the way.
You got it. You got it, man. And I appreciate the support. Thank you.
And then when it comes out, I want to have you on the show so we can promote it out to everybody.
Would love that. Game.
One more time. One more time. What's the website that we can find you? How can we find you to look for you?
Sure. So early alert list for the book, the podcast, go to don'tsaythat.com. One word, don'tsaythat.com. If you want the free marketing assessment, if your business is doing $500,000 a year or more, go to naoac.com/audit, A-U-D-I-T. Those are the two links.
I love it, guys. So make sure don'tsaythat.com. As soon as we log off, I'm going over. I'm going to go play around and have some fun and check it out. All right. So I just want to say thank you. Thank you to your beautiful bride for letting me take up some time of yours. And I just want to say thank you so much.
Thank you, man. It's been my honor, my pleasure. And as I always say at the end of these types of things, hey, guys, when life pushes you, which it will, stand straight, smile, and push it the heck back. Talk to you later.
I love it. And guys, remember, vertical momentum. The only way to go is up. I love you guys. Have an amazing week. I will talk to you later.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.